You're listening to the Starving Artists Blog Podcast, dedicated to helping artists like you do what you love and get paid for it. All right, so here is the situation. We're in the other room getting ready to watch Birdman. We have a screener, and we've been dying to see this film, and we got to talking like we always do, and we put the brakes on, said we got to get in there, and we have to record this. That's right.
Stephanie looked me in the eye and said, let's record a podcast. We can't help ourselves. We basically need to have the mics with us at all time because our good conversations need to be part of these episodes.
Right. Like, we almost are like, when we start to give little tidbits and we get really animated and excited, we're both like, stop
wait,
it.
Wait,
hold that.
Save it for the podcast.
Yeah. So we jumped in here. And
that's right.
Here we are bringing you week four.
Episode four. This is Mark Toland.
And I'm Stephanie Toland.
And we are the creators, co-founders, writers, and everything associated with starvingartistblog.com and the Starving Artist Blog podcast, which you found. You're listening to it right now, and thank you for listening. We are excited to be back. A month of Starving Artist Blog.
Yeah, and it's crazy. We have some followers. We're building it.
Yeah, a few hundred Twitter followers. We've got a lot of feedback on the blog post, and people, you know, on Facebook, Instagram, and everything. And it's just really exciting to do something creative that is more of a community base,
mm-hmm.
than because I'm so solo. You're with photography and dance. It's very solo of auditions and freelance, and sometimes it feels so removed from the art scene.
It's nice to connect with like-minded, inspirational, creative people.
Exactly. It kind of reminds me of school a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, when you're around so many people, except it's happening online, which is kind of interesting.
It's the future.
It's the future.
The future is here.
We're all connected. We don't even have pants on. We're recording this without pants. No.
Lies.
We're wearing pants. But yeah, we're back, and this is great. So let's see. What's there to talk about this week? We were just talking in the other room because the book that we shared, it'd be a couple weeks back now, was Quiet by Susan Cain.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephanie showed me this book originally, and I think you heard about it from someone else.
Yeah, I heard about it from a friend. Had mentioned it, and yeah, I loved it. It was fantastic.
Yeah,
speaks straight to my soul. It was amazing.
Interesting book, and she has a TED Talk out. And if you go to the Book of the Week section on the blog, you can read our little blurb about the book, a little bit about Susan Cain, the author, and also watch her TED Talk because she's very, 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 very smart, and she really has good things to say about the Quiet Revolution,
I'm glad it's here, man.
Yeah,
it's about time.
Which is very important, I think, because this is such a busy, fast-paced, connected world. We were just talking about that. And, Stephanie and I feel like we have a similar personality, definitely a similar personality,
mm-hmm.
but I come to that from the extrovert side. I know when I was younger, I was more extrovert than I am now. And I think that kind of just gotten beat out of me because it's exhausting over time. And I like my quiet time. Seriously, I beat it out of myself because it was so, just consumed you when you're bouncing off the walls like Jim Carrey or something.
Yeah.
And you come to that thing introvert side.
I've always been very quiet and very observant. And that I used to get so mad when I was little because people would be like, "Oh, she's so shy," and I would be like, "I'm not shy, you idiot. I'm just listening. I'm
right.
just observing." So yeah, I've always been, it's really funny to go back and watch like home movies of me because I'm sitting there with like this very adult expression on my face, just like listening and watching everything around me. Like a weird
very
kid.
Very smart in the, you can tell,
yeah.
No, because you are so observational.
Yeah,
we'll be
in
a crowd of hundreds and you'll pick up on the one person who's doing something differently from everyone else or something like that. You'll be like, that guy right there is going to do this. And then he does it and you just nail it because, not because you're good at reading people necessarily or because you're a super sleuth or something, just your keen observation in certain moments and your tendency to be analytical in the best way imaginable is really neat, because you would rather sit and take it all in than just dive in without any kind of preconceived notion of something.
You know, and I think also I was taught, I remember my dad when I was young, used to compliment my ability to sit in a car with him and not have to say anything. And just enjoy the presence of another person in silence. And that, you know, silence is not a void that has to be filled. So that's sort of a concept that I've taken, you know, that's stuck with me.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I agree about that, about silence not being a void to be filled. But I grew up with three siblings. And when you fight for attention like that, tends to be filled. That void tends to be filled. And I don't know if we were fighting for attention because we had very attentive parents, but we were definitely all kind of performing in a way, whether it was academically or theatrically or something. And I've always kind of trumped on that front. I've always kind of been over the top, out of control, because I have this competitive streak in me to be above. So when we started dating, I just didn't understand, if we're completely clear about this, I didn't understand like why you couldn't call the dentist office, why you couldn't talk to someone like how hard is it to talk about weather on the elevator or whatever, you know? And I wasn't being rude. I just didn't get that because I, you know, I'm from a small town, small talk, something that happens. I've ventured out as a sole proprietor, entrepreneur, like self-starter, and had to do all those things. Mm-hmm. I've just done them without thinking. And I didn't realize the anxiety, the kind of like literal breakdown happen for introverts.
I hate it.
I read this book. This book helped me understand you so much better. That's why it's so good. So it's not just for introverts. Like, the extroverts should read this so they get where introverts are coming from, because we all have to work together.
Yeah.
With both. You should read a little of that. Do you have it there?
So yeah, I have I can read the back here. So, Quiet, the book that started the Quiet Revolution. So, at least one-third of the people we know are introverts. They are the ones who prefer listening to speaking, who innovate and create but dislike self-promotion, definitely, who favor working on their own over working in teams. It is to introverts, Rosa Parks, Chopin, Dr. Seuss, Steve Wozniak, that we owe many of the great contributions to society. In Quiet, Susan Cain argues that we dramatically undervalue introverts and shows how much we lose in doing so. She charts the rise of the extrovert ideal throughout the 20th century and explores how deeply it has come to permeate our culture. She also introduces us to successful introverts, from a witty, high-octane public speaker who recharges in solitude after his talks, to a record-breaking salesman who quietly taps into the power of questions, passionately argued, superbly researched, and filled with indelible stories of real people. Quiet has the power to permanently change how we see introverts, and equally important, how they see themselves.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. The thing that I really love about that is the people who innovate and create but dislike self-promotion, because I've always been like, you gotta go audition.
Yeah, you've always pushed me for that, and it's been something. It's been
before this book, and since you told me about it, since I watched her TED talk, and I've honestly skimmed the second half and read the first half, and you've kind of made it a little further through this than I have, and we both felt after I kind of bullet pointed the rest of it, I was like, this has to go on the blog because it's so good. And it's exactly what the back says. It has, you can change a lot of the way you feel about introverts, but honestly, it helped me understand where you're coming from so much more. It helped us get along better.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing is, introverts can still self-promote. Introverts can still be sole proprietors, can still be an entrepreneurship. And that's the important thing that this teaches.
They're still amazing public speakers and incredible artists and fantastic performers. But we've been pushing this sort of extroverted, loud, promote yourself, sell. It's especially for the artists, because I feel like a lot of artists are introverts. You get sort of lost in like, how can I be myself and still get across what I do in a way that's not uncomfortable for me?
Especially with how much technology, like with tweets coming in so fast, and you see a million images on billboards on the highway and everything. It's just like hits you in the face. And I guess like the thing that I take away from it is there's no right way to promote yourself. And it feels like it's kind of always been preached that there is one right way.
Sure. I think that, you know, I want to say that the book that Dale Carnegie wrote was sort of the beginning of that,
which would be
salesman kind of thing. And then that sort of, it just sort of perpetuates throughout the years and builds on.
I know she references that in the book. It's How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Right, right, right.
And that will be a book of the week on the blog simply because there are great tips in there because it's little things, but there is also this kind of like forceful approach in a way that kind of evolved from that book, I think. I think that book has a lot of really good things to say. And if you haven't read it, I read lists that people put together of 100 must-read classics, and it's on there all the time because it's such an important book.
It's on my reading list for this semester.
Yeah,
so.
it's an important book. But
so is Susan Cain's.
Right, which is interesting. I think they go in tandem, and that's what I was saying before. You can make it in the arts as an extrovert, but you can also make it as an introvert. And if you read something that says you got to make cold calls, you got to knock on doors, you got to do this and this and this, and you got to go, you don't necessarily have to.
You might have to get more creative, but I mean, that's what your job is anyway.
That's what we think about all the time. And the great thing is that's what we're trying to share on the blog. So you'll see posts from Stephanie that talk about this. You'll see posts from me that talk about this, about getting creative and using what you have. And it's something that Stephanie and I have kind of termed embracing our limitations. And we would say for years our limitation was money. We didn't have the budget to put towards
anything,
you know, props or banners or anything. And gradually we've saved and gotten a few of these things smartly over time. But what we realized was our limitations that we had could be money and our reach as far as people we knew, but we could make up for that with creativity, time, and also resources. Because during my childhood, I built a huge library. We have a huge library of books. I don't have to go anywhere to create really good stuff and come up with a good show. You have a good reach kind of dance history, dance people that you can go to. And now photography, you're basically teaching yourself off the internet. So instead of spending money on courses, we're getting creative to figure out how we can approach this and get the kind of results we want.
Sure.
Without...
And I remember coming home from, you know, my first semester. I'm now in my second semester of grad school, getting my Master of Arts Administration, and coming home and telling you, like, I've already read a bunch of these articles, and I've already, you know, like, this information is not like I'm going to grad school. I'm getting my master's in this, but this information is available, everybody. Like, you could get your master's, you know, quote unquote, in whatever you want, because books and like it's, you can teach yourself. It's available. It's there.
I don't understand when someone posts on Facebook or Twitter, how do I do this with this? Like, how do I update WordPress to do this or install this on my host or whatever? Like, I get that you might not know how to do it, but you probably have the time. Like, everyone complains about time, but you probably have the time over the money. So yeah, you could run off and give someone $50 to figure something out, or try this really amazing tool called Google. Like, I'm amazed that people don't know about Google. Like, just freaking figure it out. Like Stephanie said, there's tutorials for everything.
Yeah,
we're posting tutorials on our blog for things. You know, like, it's so easy now to learn about things that can help you, that you've always wanted to know. I think the reason we are doing this and starting this is because we've been able to teach ourselves so many things on our own, and we felt people didn't have that knowledge. And we were like, well, why don't we start compiling these
ideas?
Yeah, well,
because I think people don't know where to look first. And, you know, we have abnormally so, I think, insatiable appetite for knowledge, especially as it pertains to business and the arts.
What were you doing an hour ago? You went down, you said you were going to hit some cardio real quick, and you listened to a podcast.
I did. Like, I'm usually a big proponent of not multitasking because I'm very focused on what I want to be doing and I don't like to double up. But my time right now is very stretched and limited. So, you know, I'm reading for my law class while I'm at the gym, and I'm listening to podcasts while I'm doing my cardio, and I'm listening to audiobooks on creativity and business on the bus ride to school. Like, I'm
really
doubling
up. There's a distinction, though. You don't multitask. Like, you're not trying to listen to an audiobook and process it while writing an assignment, you know?
Sure.
You're multitasking at the appropriate times. I see too many people not utilizing their time at the gym effectively just for their workouts, let alone what they're learning. You know, we were talking about that earlier, how people are just sitting down.
Right. This is a lesson that can be applied in exactly. many areas of your life, because why do it if you're not gonna do it all the way? That's right. Our big thing, and I think that's a conundrum that I face, is like, you know, when someone's in your class at grad school and they're not giving it their all, it's like, what are you doing here? Why are you not? You're paying the money to be here, and you know, eventually, only the people who do want to be there, they're the ones who stay, and you know, you sort of weed them out. But
right,
that's always, you know, it's like, why do something if you're not going to do it 100%?
Yeah, they get eliminated over time, but that's, you know, I see this is my big complaint right now, because I'm really been. Yeah, I went to the gym for yoga and a workout today. I was there about 2 hours, you know, just because I'm trying to get it in before my big trip here. And I just see there's people, I'm waiting for machines, and there's people just sitting there on Instagram or texting or something. That's great. Just go upstairs and sit in the comfy chairs and let me have the machine, you know. And it comes down to that in the arts world too, you know. If you're going to waste time scrolling Facebook when you could be finding work, or working on your craft or reading to get better, you know, then what are you doing? Like, you're not utilizing your time effectively. And to be clear, Stephanie and I aren't necessarily, I would call us workaholics because we love working, but we're not working all the time. Like, we're going to go and watch Birdman when we're done recording this and sit down, because we're also partners. We're husband and wife.
We're trying to live a life.
Right, but you can't let it dominate. But when you utilize your time effectively, and like Stephanie says so eloquently, 100%, really put in the effort, then you feel like you deserve
that.
You know, like, I've had so many bookings in the past week because we've made some really good improvements with kind of our marketing approach and things like that. And when that happens, it's so much easier for me to stop working at 5 or 6 and have dinner and relax. When I feel like I didn't get as much done during the day, and I don't think it's necessarily a fault of mine because I work really hard, but it's frustrating when you aren't seeing a reciprocation from your work. I don't feel good to go and just sit down and relax.
I was also going to say that in my experiences, I feel like I've come to find that it seems like it takes more energy and effort to not do your best.
To slack off.
To spin your wheels, to spend the money to go to school and not care about it, to, you know, to waste your time, whether you're at the gym or in class or picking, you know, I remember in dance class a lot, happened a lot, and it was always kind of like, you know, what are you doing in dance? Like, this is way too hard to come and not give your all and not get something out of it. You're wasting your time.
What an interesting thing. See, now, here's the thing about Stephanie, if I can brag for a second. Stephanie has, like I was saying earlier, this observational quality to her to something I could ramble on about for an hour, to sum it up in 5 words and just nail it. And you're like, how can she do that? You know? So what you just said, which is amazing, is it actually takes more energy to be lazy. How interesting is that idea? Maybe it's not true, but it feels like that,
you know, when you're spinning your wheels and you're wasting your time, you could be getting something done and moving on to the next thing.
What's the quote your grandma always used to say? If you want something done,
You have to do it yourself.
Well, that, but also...
give it to the busiest... Oh, yeah. If you want something done, give it to the busiest person you know.
Which is awesome, because it may seem like people who are lazy may have more time because they're just kind of sitting around or whatever, but you give it to the busiest person they know. If they've got... If they're getting everything done on their 100-item to-do list, what's one more thing?
Yeah.
If anything, when I work harder, I have more energy. So I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. The more I go to the gym, the more I'm awake the whole day, the more I want to wake up earlier. You said on your bus ride after your workout this morning, you felt like you could conquer the world. Like you just had
I had that energy.
That feeling in you.
When you force yourself to be consistent and make the time and put in the work, you not only do you feel okay with sitting down at the end of the day and relaxing, you know, you feel kind of like you can do anything. Like it's an inspiring feeling to have when you.
It's a good.
I'm not saying, you know, it's not easy. This has been something I've been saying lately. It's simple, but it's not easy. There's a distinction there.
Right. It is. It's very difficult to find the simple solution, but when you find it, then that's the way to go. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I fight it on a daily basis. Like when I want to find excuses for why I can't make it to the gym, or I didn't have time to read for my homework, or, you know, I search for those, you know, excuses too. I just push them aside and move forward.
This is a good thing just for artists of all kinds, whoever's listening, because there is this thing you have to juggle of your creative time, but also your time of getting work, because you could be the best artist in the world, but if no one knows about you and what you do, then you're never going to be able to make any money from it. Like you can dream and sit and hope work comes to you all you want, and maybe it will. Maybe you're the one in a thousand.
Maybe you're the lucky one.
Person who does, but for the rest of us, we have to work really, really hard to find work, find auditions, find clients, whatever that is. So if you were to commit for, say, a week and say, I'm going to do this for a week, I'm going to write, like you're trying to write more. So I'm going to write 1,000 words every morning with my cup of coffee, and it doesn't matter what it's about, 1,000 words, but suddenly you're in this habit and you feel more energized, and then everything you think about becomes topics to write, or in our case, a podcast topic in the other room, because we're thinking about that all the time. Or you say, I'm going to reach out and make 10 calls or send 10 emails and just, you know, offer to send off my information to someone so they're aware of what I do, and maybe they'll pick up an intern, or they'll want to hang my art in their gallery, or maybe they need a mind reader in my example, you know, or a photographer for Stephanie's case, whatever it is. I think that kind of commitment, that kind of consistency really breeds kind of this energizing quality, because you may not see results in those 7 days, but with that kind of effort, results will happen.
Yeah.
And that's the importance of this kind of action, this kind of constant action that you're taking. This book Quiet is great. It's highly recommended by us. We have always collaborated, to be fair, even in college. Like you danced in my senior show.
I did.
I helped with the program design for your senior show just by kind of looking at it for you. You've always been
someone I bounce all of my ideas off of.
Right. And I think what's interesting about this project now compared to our past is that, you know, formerly when we've collaborated, there's always been kind of a sway, like one of us has been the dominant creative in the situation, because it's been about one of our individual projects and the other's weighing in kind of, here's a small opinion. And, you know, if I don't like it for my mind reading, that's fine. It doesn't hurt your feelings. You're just offering input, or vice versa for dance or photography or whatever, grad school. But now with Starving Artist Blog, it's 50-50, and collaborating is great together. But it's when you have a person that meets you at the same kind of level, you know?
Right? Because, you know, especially as an introvert, you know, as Susan Cain points out, group work not exactly our favorite, and it's not a lot of people's favorites. It's kind of become a joke at school, like in college. It's like, ugh, the group project. Are you kidding me? Like, it's always like one person is dominant, one person doesn't do anything, you know. everyone is kind of like the diffusion of responsibility is taking place.
Isn't there the joke about when I'm dead, I want the group members from my class project to lower the casket into the grave. That way they can let me down one more time.
That was I don't know who wrote it, but it was an anonymous Yik Yak favorited to the top times a million or something. Ridiculous.
Yeah, so funny.
It's true because they notoriously do. But it's not that I don't like group work. I enjoy working with other people, like you said, I don't want to work with somebody like I'm bringing 100% all the time. So I need to be with somebody who's also bringing that same level of intensity, passion, and responsibility to the table.
Yes.
Because you know, you said earlier how we've collaborated, and I hadn't really thought in those terms before that we have, because it has, you know, it hasn't been easy all the time, and it hasn't been like, you know, just all fun all the time. But it has been pretty effortless. Like, I haven't thought about how you're so difficult to work with and all this stuff, because it just feels like it just works.
The best part about collaborating with someone who is also bringing 100% is the constant challenging of your ideas, but in the best way possible. Yeah. Not the confrontational challenge, but the idea that someone else is thinking up to your standards and makes you rethink every decision you've made. And if anything, it just strengthens your ideas, or you're like, wow, I never thought of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it has been a challenge until I read this book. Like I it sounds like this is just a podcast endorsement for this book, but
yeah,
until I read it, I didn't fully grasp how to talk to you and relate to you effectively as an introvert.
To harness the power of each other's personality traits too.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Right. I wanted to figure out how, you know, I mean, you're my wife too. I want to be able to relate to you and talk to you and just, you know, grow with you effectively, and not, I was never trying to force you to cold call or anything like that. I just didn't understand why that was so difficult, because it came so easy to me. And so when I read this and realize it's not just it's not you not wanting to do it, refuse. It's literally something inside you that makes you like sick to your stomach, or like just this nervous anxiety that builds up in you, and that is fine. Like, that's you, you know. And what we've found is like, great, I'll make the calls, and you design these amazing posters.
Right, we've found our strengths.
Right,
definitely.
We'll sit and we'll collaborate and figure out what workload can you take, what can I take, or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the best part of collaborating with someone who brings it, who comes to the table with, you know, the same amount of energy that you do. And I think that in school, that's why it sucks.
I feel like there's a quote, and I can't think of who said it now, but it goes something like, you know, like, if you're the most talented person in the room, you should probably find a different room. And I think that goes for like collaborations as well. Like if you're the only one who's bringing 100% and who has the energy and the passion and the drive, then you probably are hanging in the wrong crowd and should seek out, because collaboration can be spectacular. It can be, you know, it's a really important part of, you know, creating.
Right.
So.
Right.
I think that's important, you know, make sure that you surround yourself by, you know, people who are going to bring it.
Right. I'm looking this quote up. I think it might be James D. Watson. It looks like someone attributed it to him on Twitter. If anyone knows and wants to send us a correction on that, that's the great thing about a podcast. You're not, we don't really bullet point this or write it down. We're just having a conversation that popped in your head. I love that quote though.
Yeah.
It's so good. But James D. Watson, I think, came up on Google, but you know how, I mean, I don't think anyone lies on the internet, so you're probably right.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's just all, I think there's a filter for that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Google. That's Google doesn't let any lies on there. It's so good to read someone that puts it into words and helps us, you know, we just get along better knowing, you know, my approach, and it's not necessarily the Carnegie approach, but I just come from the extrovert spectrum and you come the other way. Let's talk about that personality test for your class because kind of bullshit.
Well, okay, so I'm definitely a skeptic if we haven't gotten that out there in the open yet. I'm kind of skeptical about pretty much...
We pretty much enter every situation with an air of skepticism. So what class was it?
It's my leadership class. And so I feel like it's pretty commonplace. Like, I feel like everybody at some point in their, you know, if you went to public schools or have interviewed for any kind of job, they do like assessments and personality and this and that. And so everyone's probably pretty familiar with taking at least one kind of this test. And I feel kind of like the entire leadership class is based around these personality tests and then how to, you know, effectively utilize aspects of your personality to be an effective leader and manager in the arts. And while that's all great, I think we're putting a little, maybe just a smidge too much weight on the results of these tests. It's good insight. It's, you know, it's fun to do. You know, it's fun to do quizzes about yourself for some reason. Well, I don't know
on
why.
On the blog for this episode, on the kind of the show notes, I'll be sure to post the links to these tests if you want to take them for fun. It's just a silly thing and it doesn't mean anything. But what we found most interesting was that it seems, especially to outsiders, because I'm able to just go in a situation and talk and not matter. And Stephanie, like she said earlier, seems shy, but she's really just quiet and observing kind of the situation. And she's not scared to talk to someone if spoken to. She's just not going to throw herself out there for just the smallest of things. And neither way is wrong. Neither way is right. I think they're both right.
Yeah. I think the world needs both, clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a third of people, like the book said before, but we thought it was so interesting that you came back from class and had your results and you had me take it. And we had identical personality results. I forget, was it type 9 or something or what?
No,
is the,
it's, oh, it was the INFJ.
Yeah. INFJ, which is
introvert,
like,
intuitive, feeling, judging.
Right. Right. Yeah. That was the first result.
And it says, apparently this is the most rare of all.
Ooh, I'm sure it says that for all of them or something.
Yeah, probably. To make you feel special.
Right.
Yeah, I feel kind of like they're horoscopes, you know? Like, they're just sort of like catered. Like, you could read any one of them and be like, yeah, that is me, you know, kind of a feeling. But
wait, are you saying horoscopes aren't real?
I'm saying they're bullshit.
Oh, snap. He went there. Oh, that's so
anyway,
funny.
So we get the same results and... I'm a little bit, well, if I'm being honest, I'm a little bit disappointed because I've wanted to feel rare and special. and then, of course, Mark comes and he's like, you know, I got the same results.
It's not like I could control it. I took it honestly. I thought it was awesome, which means we're the two in a million people who have those.
Oh my gosh.
No, but that was neat. I mean, it doesn't mean anything, but it was kind of funny to take that and see, like, I'm coming from... I don't know if anyone's fully an introvert or fully an extrovert,
well,
right?
I think everyone's got rare qualities. Yeah, I think you are both along the line somewhere in between. And I'm not a complete recluse. And I
had a friend sum it up kind of interesting lately, which was he said he was an extroverted introvert, which I think you are. And I'm an introvert extrovert. So I'm very extroverted and it seems like I'm very like that. But all I really want to do is like sit down and work on my writing and stuff like that. I kind of want to keep to yourself. And then you, on the other hand, like when you're with people who you know, you can cut loose and be totally fine.
Sure.
But the majority
I got voted class clown once upon a time. So I'm not like a total wallflower. Like somebody thought I was funny once.
Hey, there's some perks.
Yeah.
Of being a wallflower.
Okay. All right.
I got the jokes. See, I could have been class clown. I'm kind of offended. So see, you have that. We were INFJ, yeah. But I never got class clown. So you had to pull out the trump card right there to defeat me on that. Okay. Stephanie's better. You heard it here. That's it. And that's been the podcast. That's our final episode because we finally determined Stephanie's better. So that's
Of course. I knew that all along.
Yeah, we didn't need the podcast for that. Something else that we put on the blog, which is interesting, and it's something that's going to come up all the time, probably, you know, once every few episodes. It's something we feel very strongly about is is not working for free. And I know we've touched on this before, but we'll just touch on it briefly today because we posted this this open letter that this hula hooper.
Is that what the official title is? Hula hooper?
Hula hoopist?
You're asking the wrong person. I was asking you.
I don't know. we posted this. And what's interesting about the whole thing is that she was asked to perform at an event for Oprah on Oprah's tour. And she turned it down because they weren't going to pay. And then she wrote this open letter, which blew up across the internet. And I just love this because she has a really good way of writing.
It's a really good way of writing it. And I think it's so eloquently put.
We reprinted the letter on the blog and, of course, linked to her so you can read it. But what I loved is that she talks about a lot of the things we talk about as being sole proprietors and entrepreneurs. And what it is that you have to be kind of a jack of all trades. Like you wear all these hats and you do a lot. And that if you aren't taking your work seriously when someone comes to you and says they want you to work for free, then what's the point? So she writes this. Let me find this one thing here, because she writes and says this great sequence here of stuff, if I can find it. Oh, here it is. And it's about what we talk about all the time about, you know, my rates are fairly high now because people don't realize they're paying for years of experience, my props, my travel, my lodging, my meals, the drive to get there. And I basically 48 hours to do a 45-minute show. You're paying a lot.
There's a lot that goes into this that I don't think people, not even taking into consideration the hours and the travel. There's a lot that goes into the planning and execution of being an entertainer that's traveling the nation to perform.
Right, right. So here, this is what's in this open letter, and her name is Revolva, like revolver, but with an A at the end. And she's a hula hoop dancer, artist, hula hoopist, something like that. It goes like this. She says, criticizing the Oprah Winfrey tour is scary. Oprah Winfrey. I can already see the impending comments about how artists should be grateful to appear at your event, which, by the way, is certainly paying the going rate to the lighting people, the sound people, the caterers, the janitors, the people who erected the outdoor side stage, basically everyone except the local artist appearing on said stage, which is a great point.
That's my favorite point, actually. Everyone else is getting paid.
Right. They didn't go to the restaurant and say, hey, you'll get tons of exposure if you just offer your food up. You
or know? The workers who are putting all of the stuff together, erecting the stage. Hey, you're going to get lots of exposure by putting up the stage that is at the Oprah Winfrey, whatever.
Right.
No. And then she wouldn't do it.
Yeah, exactly. And then she goes on to say, folks reading this might not understand how much rehearsal time, equipment fees, booking time, advertising costs, etc. go into being an entertainer. The pay for a gig is payment for all those back end work hours. Here's a breakdown. And she links to another post, which is part of the letter that we shared. And you can go ahead and follow it. But the other post walks through all the hats she wears, from marketer to director to, you know, finally, at one point, she hula hoops for a few minutes during the day and then goes back to being her manager, travel coordinator, and all those things in between. And, if someone comes to you and says they want exposure or something, maybe just send them this open letter and remind them, like, you're not just paying for my 45 minutes
that I'm on stage. That's not what you're paying for.
Right.
You're paying for everything that goes into it. And there's a lot that goes into it. Yeah. And also, I think that it's important as artists, not just for the people that are going to be booking artists, but for the artists themselves. Like, you know, there are a lot of artists that take work for free. And then so we almost have to, like, we have to band together on this and sort of collectively build that up within our artistic community as well, to not take work for free or for exposure or just for exposure, because a lot of times they'll be like, you know, the people at Oprah are probably going to go, okay, whatever, because someone else is going to jump for the opportunity.
It sounds crazy for us to suggest that you should turn down work. But like we were talking about last week, we were saying how, you know, kind of at school, it feels like Yep, you're going to have another job. You're going to have to wait tables, all those things. There's a stigma of like, you just got to work for whatever you can get, a few dollars free, get exposure, whatever. I really don't think that's the case. Like, you're not, never have I gotten, and I've done a ton of free things, never have I gotten exposure out of anything. Maybe I could put a cool client on the resume, but that's about it. And I don't think it was worth it. So if
you're gonna, you've done your fair share of,
I've done tons of free stuff when I didn't realize,
exposure or for free.
Sure, I've failed in that department because they promise something they can't give. What, I don't even know what exposure means. No one at those events comes up and says, "Hey, I heard you're here for exposure. Let me book you." You know,
yeah.
If they found out I was paid, they probably want to hire me because they see there's a value.
Yeah, there's a value attached to that, and that, yeah, that's interesting. That's a whole different. We could have an entire podcast dedicated, and we probably will, dedicated to price and value and sort of the misunderstanding behind all of that. So that's a thing to put in our back pocket to talk about it later.
It comes down to all those hats you wear and the like she mentions in that letter, the back end hours, the years and years of experience that led to this small
moment. The thing that she leads into is so perfect, because even someone like me, even an artist, like, you know, to just have it laid out, like, you're not expecting the caterers and the crew and the lighting, and you're paying all of them. So why are artists so different then? Why have we done, like, why have we done this to ourselves, and have we done it to ourselves?
That's it. No, it's within the community. It's like you said, we all have to kind of come together and refuse to do this, because there are price shoppers out there who want the best possible price, but you don't want to work for those people. You want the people who value what you do, want to pay what you're worth, because we've got to eat, and we're all about doing what you love, but also getting paid for it.
Right. And also, might I add that what we're doing as artists is important, and it's useful to society, and it's time that we try to at least start, you know, educating people on how imperative this is to the community.
Right.
And valuing our work and valuing each other's work, which means not, you know, just if someone else jumped at that opportunity, I can guarantee it. They jumped at that opportunity for exposure at the Oprah Winfrey.
Great. They
whatever.
Can put Oprah on their resume, but...
And they're probably not going to get anything else out of it.
Yeah, but I guess ethically or morally, like, I don't know how they feel about that, because someone's going... it was an outdoor stage. It's all this in the letter, and it's worth reading, you know, and bookmarking for a future read, for inspiration when someone calls you for free work. But it's just, I just don't know. That's a hard thing. It's Oprah, and, you know, jump at the chance, but you got to have standards and you got to stick to them no matter what happens.
Well,
and the more you do it, the more likely you are to start getting your rate and improving very quickly.
I think this girl is smart, because I think that she is a true marketer, because she has spun something that could have been just a dinky stage performance into an open letter that has made the rounds on the internet, and I think has been way better than anything.
She got
more exposure off of her blog than she would have doing, you know, performing outside on a side stage.
Hell yeah,
so,
good point.
So good,
point.
Good for her.
Yeah. The other thing, and probably the final thing for this week's episode, is that a few days ago, we've helped, you know, we like we said, we wear a lot of hats. We've helped a lot of people kind of get websites off the ground, and some of them we host, some of them we don't. And one of these people kind of messaged us and said, "Hey, I hired someone to do the website for me, and I need you just send them over the login information so they can get in." And we were like, "Well, we could have done that for you. Why don't you contact us?" And they're like, "Oh, I didn't want to be a burden. And it's like, "Oh, okay, no problem." So they hired someone. But what should have been a simple exchange, of course, turned into 10 messages.
3 days now.
Several phone calls.
Going on 3 days.
Right. And we don't mind any of that, to be clear. But it, in an effort to not burden us, it became even more of a burden.
Right.
And it really got me thinking. Something that irks me a lot is people who just refuse to ask for help. Like, there is no way, even with all those tutorials on the internet, even with iTunes University and grad school, there's still going to come a time when you get asked for help. And I'm fortunate I get to ask Stephanie for help or vice versa a lot of the time. But I ask for your help every day because there's just some things I can't conquer. I have a friend that in Texas that I collaborate with and I call when I hit a brick wall on an idea and he helps me, you know. I text people all the time, like, I need your input on this. Can you write something like this? Can you give me a rec letter or whatever? Like, that is so important as an artist. You can't be ashamed or feel like you are like you are getting in the way of someone saying, and you can't be apologetic. I had someone call today and the first thing out of their mouth was, I'm sorry to interrupt you with whatever you're doing right now. It's like, no, just get to the point. Like, it's not an interruption for me because I'm happy to help someone if they're bringing 100% to the table, like you said earlier, with a collaboration.
Right. And I think that's part of just, I feel like it's just part of the culture that we're in now that people don't, like, nobody wants to be a bother. Everyone's so tiptoeing around asking for help. Wanting to call, I don't want to interrupt, I don't want to get in the way, and all of that, it's creating almost more trouble. And like you said, this problem that cropped up in the effort to not be a burden, and to it created this big issue for us that we had to resolve, and we're happy to help, but this person ended up spending money they didn't need to spend, and then we ended up having to do more than we would have if they would have just come to us and asked for help in the first place. Right. And so I think, I don't necessarily like to ask for help, so that's something that I can heed this advice as well.
But you still do it. You still do it.
It's important to, you know, and to not feel like most of the time, here's the surprising thing, even though we live in this culture where nobody wants to ask anybody else for anything, surprisingly, when you do ask, people are like more than happy to be completely accommodating. And they're like overwhelmingly, like, people, it's, I feel like it's kind of inside of us that we want to,
sure,
we want to share and we want to help and we want to. It makes us feel good. You know, it's almost a selfish thing to want, you know, like, it makes you feel good when you help somebody.
Right. Like, I just had, I'm going to do a really interesting project. This girl from the suburbs messaged me and wants me to be her like community sponsor for her senior project. Very strange, but she has to approach someone in a field she's interested in. And for some reason she's interested in mind reading. And I find it fascinating that it's mind reading, not magic, first off. And second off, that she's female, which is interesting. There's not many female people who would even get interested in magic or mentalism. And I agreed to do that because, of course, I'll jump and help anyone. Kids message me all the time. Kids, world. But seriously, like, I'll go and a high schooler will message me and say, you know, how did you get into this? What can I do to learn? And I am more than willing to help. You just have to ask for it. And I've been guilty of not asking, but lately in the past 5 to 10 years, I'm not ashamed to call someone up and ask for help at all, because I know if I want to get where I want to be,
it's going to take more than us. That's
right.
For
that's
sure.
Why we ask you guys for your feedback and your questions, because this isn't just Stephanie and myself. Even now, even just getting the blog off the ground was all of our professors, our parents, our brothers and sisters, anyone that we've talked to about art that's inspired us and helped us, we've taken all those ideas and brought them to you. There's no way we could have had all this just on our own. Mm-hmm. We're standing on the shoulders of giants. It's one of my favorite expressions, you know, like all these people that have come before us that have helped us, we're bringing that together to help you guys. So Don't be afraid to ask for help. That's an important lesson to learn as an artist.
Yeah, and I think it's an overlooked part, you know? I think it's good.
Yeah. So I think that's getting to the end. Wow, what a great talk. I'm so glad we jumped in here and did this.
Yeah, I'm glad that we sort of hijacked our evening and came in here to share with all of you. So
I'm so ready to watch Birdman.
Me too.
Birdman
has been a long time coming.
Birdman is our joke of the year because we've tried to see it in theaters 5 or 6 times, and once we got there, but we were at the wrong theater because we were in a different city and
we mixed up
on the times and stuff, so we missed that one. Another one we started to go and then we got called back because we had to take care of some problems in the city we went, and then they weren't showing it or something. I forget. We've had all these instances of trying to see it. So finally the screener came and we get to watch it now. just in time for the Oscars, which is very exciting. I just got back from Minnesota, and then I'll be heading to Milwaukee, and you're still going to school. And I guess we said that last week, but we booked and took care of all of our New York stuff between last week's episode and now. So we're officially all set for the New York trip.
Yeah, and I'm excited to bring you fresh content from a new place, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh, wow, it's going to be so much fun. Same as always, if you have ideas or anything, tweet them to us, Facebook, Instagram. Let us know.
Yeah, we're everywhere, guys. Just hit us up. Let us know what's happening.
We're all over it. Thanks for listening to this. We've had a lot of fun. That was the Starving Artist Blog Podcast. If you enjoyed it, be sure to subscribe on iTunes.
Also, head over to starvingartistsblog.com where we share more inspiration and ideas for you.
Want to join the conversation? Email questions and feedback to info@starvingartistblog.com. Thanks for listening.